This is Mechanics After Hours.
Welcome, of course, to Rack Addicts After Hours, a music and technology podcast. First, you are listening to Ben. That's me. You're hearing my voice. Thank you for choosing to listen to it on your favourite podcast service. And Pete is here as well with me for another fun-filled 30 minutes to what's the longest we've done? I don't know, like nearly 2 hours, hour and a half.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Hour and a half.
Could be.
Two weeks.
3 years of solid talking into microphones. Whatever length of time it may be, we must begin with a weekly update. I'm going to go first.
Oh,
because I'm in charge. I'll do what I want. Okay, so nothing has happened at all. Over to you, Pete. No, I'm joking. So I went to see Everything last night. The band, who I might have mentioned their album some weeks back because it became a Swift favourite. It was quite a good gig. This was Cambridge Junction in Cambridge. And it was, I think, supported by the National Lottery. They seem to have a scheme where they're trying to support smaller venues that may or may not be struggling. There was a weird scheme where you bought a ticket, but it also was a free ticket for somebody that had a lottery card, scratch card thing. I don't know how it worked. We just bought two tickets like normal human beings. But it was a great show, good sound, very little crowd interaction from the front man, which was interesting. Not really a problem, because he was doing the good stuff. It was great. For this podcast's audience, however, I was interested in the modular that I saw on stage. So the guitarist on the left, from my perspective, is that stage right? I don't know. He had one of those Doepfer monster basses, you know, with the flat one and the angled one. No idea what was in it, but it was densely patch cabled, and he used it for one song.
And was it the song that you suspected had modular on it?
No. So I think when I mentioned this album, I was intrigued because there are some strange bleepy bloopies on there, but the first track is called Teletype, which I believe is a monome or those people, I think it's one of those. Yes, it's their big module with the screen that you plug a keyboard into and do scripty stuff that's very niche and kind of modular hipstery things. Anyway, yeah, he was using his modular system for the track I Want a Love Like This, which is awesome, but unexpected, and I was slightly disappointed that I couldn't get close enough to see anything on it, and it was only one song.
What happened when they did play the track that you suspected did have module on it when you were listening to the album before you'd seen them live?
Backing tracks. That's what they did. I believe that could have been the first song they played, so they weren't actually on stage when the strange noises began to happen, and they walked on with the strange noises.
Okay, so yeah. A long stick didn't come on and push a button on the module or something beforehand. Yeah.
That would have been funny, but alas, no.
So did that track get played in its entirety before they walked on, or as they were walking on? Or
Yeah, whole track got played. They just had that intro thing to walk on to.
Maybe it was a studio track that they couldn't easily reproduce live.
Or, as is often the way with modular, and I found with performing, if you've got a patch that will do one thing, either transitioning to another one or having a multi-purpose patch is either, well, it either requires a huge modular or it's not feasible. And the guy was playing guitar and other percussion things throughout the show.
Yeah, you don't want to be bogged down in all that grief, do you?
Nah, repatching and patching, but it's cool seeing modular in a slightly more mainstream, if slightly weird, band.
Well, it's very difficult to get a modular system to even sound the same twice.
Oh yeah, definitely. The part that he played was chordal in nature, and I would suspect digital oscillators, just because surely you wouldn't be mental enough to try and do chords on a modular with three analog things to tune or something like that. It could have been, you know, braids or plats through a filter and modulation.
Fair enough. Did you say it was chord-like?
Yes. Well, there were chords, most certainly.
So could it be a polycinematic or something like that?
Could well be, yes. It could also have just been, obviously, if they have a laptop running backing tracks, it could have just been MIDI from there, doing all the wizardry. I may never know unless I somehow get to interview the guy, which I doubt, but it would be great if anybody, you know, knows, kind of get me in there. Yeah, that'd be great. Hooray! So that's it for me. But Pete, what have you been doing the past 7 days? Well, I don't think it's been 7 days since the last one. Anyway, far away.
Right, something, I was going to mention this last week, but for whatever reason, I just didn't get round to doing it.
Slipped your mind.
And it's a something that I was first alerted to, I believe, believe I saw it on the Sonic State website.
Right.
Anyway, it's a gentleman from Brazil. His name is Ronaldo Lopez
Teixeira.
Rolt.
Cool.
And he is a retired illustrator and graphics designer.
Mm-hmm.
And what he seems to have done in his retirement is start creating scale models of classic synthesizers.
Oh, cool. That's fun.
I don't know quite what scale he's building them at, but they're sort of, you know, they can sit in the palm of your hand, and he'll build anything from like a small thing right up to a grand piano. They're all handmade, according to his website and his details. Well, I say website, he's got a Facebook page. Anyway, I saw them and thought, oh, I would really like an example of all my live instruments from my 1984 progressive rock setup.
Oh, in a little, in the classic Rick Wakeman form, arc of synthesizer.
Yes, exactly. So he already does a Jupiter 4.
Wonderful.
And he also does a Lambda, a Korg Lambda, which is surprising because it's a bit obscure. Unfortunately, he doesn't do a Juno 60.
That seems, he does a Korg Lambda, but no Juno 60. What's going on there?
Or an SH-101.
Hmm.
But he's open to commissions so to speak.
Wonderful.
So what I thought, I'm going to order the Jupiter 4 and the Korg Lambda, and I'm also going to ask him if he could possibly make me a Juno 60 and an SH-101, which would complete my whole lineup. So I'm going to have this little miniature setup.
That is super cool.
I don't know what scale it is. There's no scale quoted, but I would like to say it's somewhere between 1/10 and 1/6 or something like that. It's not quite...
I wouldn't know how to begin judging it without having one to measure.
Well, I believe an Action Man, if you're familiar with is 1/6 because they're about 12 inches high. And it's based on an average person or an average man of around 6 foot. So maybe slightly smaller than that scale, but not quite the sort of Star Wars figure size. Somewhere in between.
Oh, I'm on his Facebook at the moment. These look so cool. He's got a Rhodes here as well. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and if you look at the time that it takes to actually build them, it's from 2 days to 15 days.
Ooh, yeah, they really look great. Ooh, actually, good guess on your scale. I'm looking at, what's this, Korg Vocoder in 6th scale.
Okay.
Nice one, good eyes.
I couldn't really tell with the photographs. I couldn't get a perspective. So 1/6 scale.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Excellent.
So I am going to order those two this week or next week at the latest. Yes, that one's an interesting one. That's Keith Emerson's Hammond with his custom Moog modular system standing on top of it.
The one that is in Moog HQ, or the replica that they made is in Moog HQ. Pretty cool.
Yes, and they're reasonably inexpensive for what they are.
Okay, which was the one that... Korg Lambda, do you have a price for that?
I believe, off the top of my head, or I could actually look at the price list, that would be even easier, wouldn't it?
I'm going to guess. Are we working in euros?
We're working in US dollars.
US dollars?
Yeah.
85.
Bit higher.
123.
Slightly lower.
115.
Exactly.
Ooh.
On the button.
It's a chunk, but not unreasonable for fine craftsmanship.
Yeah, something handmade. I mean, as you can see in the photographs, they're very realistic.
Very detailed.
Yeah, very detailed. Something that... And a proper piece of artwork.
Yeah, it's great.
So I thought I'd better grab them because I'm normally a bit slow on the uptake on these things. And I think I'll get around to them. And when I check, they've either decided to stop making them and they're all sold out, or God forbid something's happened to the gentleman and they're no longer available. So I'm going to make sure that I grab these as soon as possible. But it will be interesting to see how long they take. I expect I'm going to be waiting a few weeks for these commissions.
Definitely.
And then it'd be interesting to find out his response in respect to the other two keyboards
that
he doesn't currently make. But his range is quite comprehensive as it is now. There's a couple of pages of different instruments, quite a few pages actually. But some of them are, I don't know. Obviously, he's got his motivation to why he's built them. He also builds things like RE-201 Space Echoes.
That's fun.
Yeah, $57.50 US dollars for that one.
What's the website? I want to peruse.
Well, I've gone to a UK company. So also, because I was hunting around and I came across this company called rlmusic.co.uk.
Mm.
And they are a synth recycler repairer and in the UK, and one that I had not heard of before.
No bells here.
Another interesting, let's say,
they've
contact.
Have the synth miniatures on there. Yeah.
Yeah, but their primary job is to service synths, and also they recycle and sort of renovate synths and sell them.
Mm.
Talk your classic original Prophet 5s, OBXs, all that type of stuff. And they've got quite a few for sale on their website if you've got copious amounts of cash.
Yeah, let's have a look. Let's see what they've got. Vintage synths for sale.
Yeah.
Ooh, apparently there's a CS80 floating about on there.
I don't even want to hear how much it costs. It just make me shudder.
I'm trying to find it. If they have a price on here. Buy this CS80. You got to get in touch with them.
Yeah. Price on application. Doesn't surprise me at all.
5,000 for an EDP Wasp Deluxe.
And I used to ridicule them when I used to go in and look at them in ABC Music in Addlestone.
Yeah. Ooh, but it comes with the spider.
Yeah. Oh, exciting stuff. Anyway, I contacted Richard at RL Music.
Are we talking SH101 situation here?
No, actually, I hadn't really got to that stage. I just contacted him in respect to these.
Oh, the miniatures.
The miniatures, right. And say, because the notification or the thing I read was from 2019. Mm-hmm. And I mean, technically, in my mind anyway, all bets are off.
Yeah,
with
of course.
What was happening pre-pandemic to what happens now. I mean, You don't know whether the company survived the pandemic, the lockdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in a different world. Anyway, they were quick on the mark in respect to coming back to me and confirm they're still dealing with the gentleman in São Paulo, Brazil, and sent me the link to the current price list.
Wonderful.
And so, yes, I shall be placing my orders forthwith.
Excellent. Any more tales from your week?
Nothing that would interest our audience.
Righty. That means it's news time. There are some things. Let's do the really boring one because we've kind of just come to expect it. Yay, price rises, Moog stuff. The big one here, obviously their prices are going up. Of course they are. So, these are dollar prices from Moog, and, you know, some of them are less than inflation price hikes, but the grandmother, alas, has been hit pretty hard. Let me find the number here. Since I last read this article, they have updated it with the new numbers. Either way, 38% price rise on the grandmother. We've got...
What?
41% on the subsequent 25.
Oh, dear me.
That's in America. In Europe, it's 53.78%.
Well, let's get me right. What is a subsequent 37? I'm thinking it's...
Well, we're talking 25 here. I don't have the 37 on the top of my head, but it was 939 euros for the subsequent 25, and now we're talking 1444. I think those are based on Thomann's prices.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
What about the subsequent 37?
Who knows? Let me have a look at where it's sitting these days.
And what was the percentage on... Was that on both subsequents or just the 25?
That was just the 25. It was 50-something.
But you would infer from that that it's going to affect the 37 as well.
None of them are really in line with each other. It's quite strange. Thomann has subsequent 37 in stock within however many weeks. That means they don't have any in there on order. £16.99, great British poundy boys.
For a 25?
37.
37. I think that's what they were.
Yeah?
So...
No price change on there. Let me check
as
what
yet,
the
though.
25 is on Thomann's website right now. 1,222 British pounds.
No, that does infer...
That's massively more than it used to be.
That...
It was sub 1,000.
Yeah, that does infer that they've
way lower.
Applied the price hike to it now.
Big oof, as the kids say.
Well, that's just going to perturb people from actually purchasing the things.
Yeah, and be unpleasant in the second-hand market. I'm sure people are going, ooh,
well, it's
going to
be the,
for it.
It's going to be the combination of people pulling the purse strings in because of the cost of living crisis, and at the same time, all these aspirational items going sky-high price-wise.
Absolutely.
It's just going to deter anyone from making those purchases.
Alas.
So I can understand why Moog are having to do it, especially if we can take the rumour that I was talking about either last week or the week before, that Moog are struggling.
Yeah.
And they are having problems getting enough funds to buy the components in.
Yep.
That's despite any supply chain issues, you're actually just getting the components anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing adds up to a hot mess, basically.
In technical terms, it's a disaster. Yeah, unpleasant.
And this is going to be reflected right across the industry as well.
Yeah, so it's synthesizers.com, Future Retro, and WMD. Those are the big ones that went, I believe.
Yes, but I think this is just the beginning.
Indeed it is. No further speculation from these two untrained economists here. Let's have a look at our other favourite segment that we haven't had for a while. What's Behringer done now? Well, apparently they've finished working on their ARP Selena module, and it's quite funny looking just because it's the sparsest panel I think they've done yet. I mean, there's not much to a Selena. It sounds stringy, and by that I mean it kind of sounds terrible because most string synths do until you stick a bunch of effects on it. But yeah, there you are. If you're desperate for string synth action, in 3 years' time, you might be able to buy a Behringer Selena.
Now, when you say 3 years, is that you being whimsical, or yes, is that something that you've read on there?
No. I mean, who knows when they'll actually turn up. It is yet another of their hard vaporwares, I'm sure.
Well, we've got so many things in prototype at the moment.
Yeah.
And I have no idea when we'll see any of it.
Have any of those really little things turned up at the shop? I can't remember what they're like, the something soul, all of those, because they announced like maybe 8 of them or something.
I have not seen them.
Mm.
And I know that there's quite a few Behringer products that when you go and look, the ETA is 3 months or longer, which is code for we have no idea when this product's going to be available.
Sounds about right. Sounds about right.
And because all their production is very much centered in China,
mm,
and although I haven't heard much news about it, I assume China is still going into lockdown after lockdown.
Most likely.
They're following this zero COVID policy,
mm-hmm,
plus all the other stresses and strains, I would imagine that it's not going to be easy for Behringer.
Did I mention a Kickstarter project I backed, which was called Jack the Bike Rack? Ring any bells?
Possibly.
Mm. It's a bike rack with some cool features, whatever. But they've been amazing with their updates. And of course, like every other thing ever, it's been delayed and whatever. But they've got a guy who's in whatever area of China it is. I can't remember. But he's literally at the factories when he can be to check up on progress and do all the logistical bits and pieces that must be done. But they've been sending loads of emails with exactly where everything is and what needs to go where and what happens, and every other email is locked down again. But it's been quite interesting to see. I'm in no rush to get the thing, and I'm sure I will, but very slow.
I mean, it isn't just centered on China.
Mm.
I've got a number of components that I ordered in June for a kit that I'm making for a customer.
Oh yeah.
Part of that kit is made up from a reed switch,
mm-hmm,
with a cable, and an opposite side of that is a magnet that activates the reed switch.
Classic, like, door alarm style.
Yeah, exactly that. It's a door sensor. The components were ordered at the beginning of June. Every month, I've received an email from the supplier pushing the ETA back another month until I got to this month, and then they pushed it all the way back to December.
Amazing.
I have phoned the manufacturer to see what's going on. It's a UK manufacturer.
Interesting.
But that product is made in India.
Oh.
The problem they have is they can't get the actual reed switches that go inside.
Mm.
So I don't know where they're made. Maybe it's made in China, maybe it's made elsewhere, but they can't get them to India to make the switches to bring over here. And the part that's been pushed to December is the magnet. So all it is a magnet encased in some blue plastic,
mm-hmm,
with a couple of holes so that you can attach it to wherever you need the magnet.
Time to get your 3D printing
and
on.
And if I wait for this particular batch or this shipment, I'll have been waiting in excess of 7 months in total.
For some small bits of nothing very exciting.
Yeah. Luckily,
nightmares.
I have found another supplier, but the product is twice the cost.
Hey, Mr. Client, how do you like the look of this?
I did have to write to the client and ask them for a new PO reflecting the new cost because I couldn't supply. They're very understanding because they're experiencing the same supply chain problems right across all the range of components and products and things that they need for their business.
Mm.
And I would imagine that story is reflected right across the manufacturing sector.
Most definitely.
I have certainly had quite a few conversations, as you do, when people come in the shop, we talk about synths and other things.
Yeah.
But if they're there for an extended period, or if we're waiting for something, or let's say they may be doing finance or something like that, you get into a more generalistic conversation.
Yeah.
And I often ask people what they do for a living and so forth. And recently, certainly this year, we've often got into the conversation about supply chain problems, because I'm always these days having to make excuses, going, terribly sorry, we don't have it in stock, we don't know when it will be in stock, etc., etc. And quite often the comments I get back was, yes, I'm in the
such and such an industry.
Yeah.
And
quite often it's the motor car industry.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman the other day was telling me that with the new cars, they're only issuing one key.
Oh, wow.
They can't get enough keys.
Wow.
So it's not just semiconductors, it's all sorts of items, from very inert things that are just bits of metal right through to complex semiconductors, just right across the board. And it's a myriad of problems as well. It's not just inflation rocketing away, it's the logistics of getting them physically from wherever they are in the world, it's the lockdowns in China. There's so many compounding issues that are really making the whole process of supplying items, acquiring items, very difficult. And obviously our main interest is how it reflects on the synth world.
Well, If you're feeling the pinch and you can't get your favourite modules to your door fast enough, here's a solution for you. You may have heard of VCV Rack, but a new member of the mod CAF has suggested an alternative, which I was checking out earlier today, and it's kind of cool. Have you heard of BespokeSynth.com?
I have not.
Ah. Well, it isn't a custom-designed synth just for you, made to measure fashion. It is a free, yes, that is free, piece of software that is somewhere between a node-based programming system of the many that exists, something like Max for Live, and a modular synthesizer, and a music visualizer all at the same time. It's really cool. So, I would give you a demo, but I really don't know how it works that well. But I did plumb some things together. I grabbed a little Car Plus Strong voice, and in fact, there is an M185 sequencer in there, much like the one that you built and inspired the Metropolis and such. So that's in there. It's kind of cool. But yes, if you like that kind of programming thing and you want to get your modular on but work with a slightly different UI, check it out. I wish I could say more, but maybe I'll have something next week to play to you.
When you say slightly different UI, what do you mean by that?
Here it be. So you know what a node-based programming situation is, don't you, sir? I hope.
I think it's the little boxes and you kind of attach.
Exactly. Okay, let me cook something up live. I changed my mind, Pete. I will need to play something into the Rodecaster. Let me connect to that bad boy, Rodecaster Pro. Connected. Here we go. So yes, a nice blank thing. That is a Car Plus Strong synth voice that I've just opened there. Let's go. Interestingly, the M185 sequencer lives in the instruments category. So there it is. There's a block over on the left, well, two blocks, which are kind of global ones, so you don't need to wire them in, but that is transport, your tempo and play pause, and then scale. You can have a global scale, which is quite nice. I'm going to plug the M185 into my Car Plus Strong thing, and then I'm going to go, eh, and then I'm going to open a VST plugin within this bit of software. Yes, it is that cool, and of course it's going to be Valhalla Superman. Massive, because you could never have too much reverb. I'm going to dial up a large Hydra harp and turn the mix to 25%. Then I'm going to plug in my Car Plus Strong synth, plug Supermassive into the output, turn my volume down. There we go. And let me just get some stuff happening. I'll probably need to change my audio output stuff. I'll do that in a mo. Settings. Audio output device. Rodecaster Pro. Save. Oh, hang on. Requires restart. Let me just save this little project. My knees are getting very toasty right now. You're going to be recording at 48 on here, aren't you?
Yeah.
Interestingly, sample rate. Of course the sample rate's not going to be zero. That's not a thing. Let's try this. See if this works. Load. It's a little bit weird to work with the sequencer. You've just got horizontal sliders that aren't very sensitive, and it doesn't seem to immediately respect what scale you set. Let me see if I can stick a quantizer in there and see what happens, shall we? Because I do have that option. If I can remember where it lives. Note effects. Quantizer. This is quite sinister, isn't it? I should tell you a story about death and loss and fear, and not wanting to look outside your window because you're unsure who will be looking in, or something. Anyway, but it has this kind of fun thing. The audio patch cables have a little waveform visualizer going on, and there's that classic Windows situation in the middle. So that's a terrible thing that I just whipped up. Here's a little something that some person from ModCaf posted in the Discord. I hope they won't mind me showing a little chunk of it. That's a bunch of the piano roll style note sequencers and the basic oscillatory synthesizer thing. It's pretty cool, and a different workflow.
Mm.
Ooh. Ooh, indeed.
The interface isn't overly exciting. It's not one of these drag and drop your modules in. It...
Well, you kind of do. You just go for your drop down and...
But it's very text-based, isn't it, in some respects?
Yes. It's... According to the person who suggested it, it is actually designed for live use. There's a lot of shortcuts and things that one can utilise.
As long as you can remember them.
If you have a good memory for shortcuts, you might be okay here.
Yeah. Trying to remember your shortcuts on stage in the middle of a performance.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you can get your MIDI mapping action going.
But it's free. So...
It's free. And they have a Discord and a GitHub, so you can have a look.
And it's called again?
BespokeSynth.com. That's where you go get it. And there are charity donation options, should you desire those. Now, here's a thing that I spoke about last week, I think. Noble listener, thank you for tuning in on Apple Podcasts. Did you know that you can leave us a cheeky little review right there? And of course, it's going to be 5 stars. It could be whatever you want. Because what we want to know is, what do you think? Are you enjoying this show? Do you enjoy our little subjects? Which are your favourite contributors? Do you, like us, miss Luke and his spacey bits dearly? Even if you're not on Apple Podcasts, you can also leave ratings and comments and such on Listen Notes, on Podcast Addict, on Podchaser, on Castbox. And you can also find us at Rack Addicts UK on Facebook and Instagram. What I'm saying is, please, please tell us you're there. We really want to know if our audience are real human beings and not bots.
Tell me, Ben, can you do something on Spotify?
No, I don't think you can. Not as far as I can see, anyway. I did some Googling earlier today. It's like, which podcast tools can you actually engage on? Not many.
Oh, well.
And please, if you're listening to this in the bath, which is a usage of Rack Addicts After Hours that we thoroughly endorse, don't grab your phone with your slippery wet fingers and drop your phone in the tub. That would be a disaster.
If they got any sense like I do, I take my Bose Bluetooth speaker into the bathroom and I leave my phone in the bedroom plugged in.
Yes, indeed. That is pro-level podcast consumption.
Yeah.
I was going to say something. I don't know what it was. Oh dear. Yes, well, indeed, we are actually waiting. Because I know that this podcast isn't going to be published until Saturday, most likely, I can tell you now, but in the future, really, that we're waiting to go to a gorilla modcaf at the English heritage location of Waverley Abbey, the ruins of, which we've done before. But yeah, we have a little outdoor thing, battery-powered. Pete's generously brought along some wireless speakers, the Bose S1 Pros that we always used to love selling at the shop. And it's going to be nice, relaxing, hopefully still warm, and hopefully not rain. We'll see how we go. But yes, we shall report back from... This will be the third outdoor modcaf. I've only been to two. The first was in Wellesley Woods, I think, which looked really cool, and it got really dark, and people had lights, and it was super cool, but I didn't go. I'm sad. Anyway, we'll report back.
I've got a torch in the car.
Perfect. He's all ready. I've got a torch on my phone. It's as good as I can get. Us young, unprepared people. Anyway, we got to wrap this one up. You know what that means? It's time for What YouTube Channel Has Pete Found This Week? But more importantly, it is the Miscellaneous Multimedia Recommendation. Take it away, Pete.
Take it away.
I don't know what you're taking, but get it away from me now.
Right, this week, a channel that surfaced in my YouTube stream and caught my eye, and that generally means that I subscribe, thumbs up, all the rest of it.
All of those things.
Anyway, this particular channel is called Made by Madman.
Intriguing. Tell me more.
So this is I would describe it as a very skilled fabricator, engineer, whatever you want to call him. He makes objects from virtually any material, including metal, wood, plastic, everything. And once they're finished, they look like really professionally made artifacts you would possibly buy and install in the workshop or whatever the usage of. It does make a lot of tool-type constructions. And it's one of those where it's very highly edited. So let's say he's cutting up some steel plate and he puts the plate on the table and he sort of scribes the line and then sort of just chops with the back of his hand and it will magically cut. So
those are fun.
A lot of the gruesome and grisly, long-winded cutting and filing is avoided. So these are relatively short videos and the thing comes together. It's more like an animation video, to be honest, the way things are moving around. The one I watched, and there are quite a few on there, he made it's a bit like a dentist drill type affair. So it was a drill fed off a motor inside a steel case. And it had all sorts of attachments like abrasive wheels and little drills and so forth, a little chuck thing. And then it had a flexible drive that was going into the metal case and being powered directly off the motor. And then the case is completely sprayed and everything. It just looks, when it's finished, it just looks like something shop-bought.
Yeah.
And a lot of the titles of the videos sort of go, I made this with my own hand, so to speak.
Yeah.
People don't believe it, et cetera, because of the quality of the product. Basically, that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Made by Madman.
Looks pretty great. Actually, some of the work that's got to go into just the video capture and editing is not trivial, I think.
Yes, I always appreciate it when you can see people have really put a lot of effort into their production.
Okay, well, I'm not going to recommend anything, but let me tell you about my strange consumption of media. So I think I've mentioned before that I'm trying to escape YouTube, and as you can see by the fact that I'm on YouTube right now, it's not working very well. But what I do most of the time is not consume stuff that's new to me, so I have an evening free and nothing to do, and as most often happens, I also have no desire to do anything, so I'll jump on Netflix and I will watch, rewatch, re-rewatch, and re-re-re-rewatch Parks and Recreation, or Rick and Morty, or Futurama. And generally when I'm walking about and doing other things, I'm listening to Harry Potter on loop all the time. Am I mad?
No, my son and even my daughter do exactly the same sort of thing, and they are of a very similar demographic to yourself.
What are they digesting on loop?
Rick and Morty.
Yep.
Most of the things you've mentioned, actually. Yeah. What's that? There's one that's a police precinct. I can't remember. It's
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, that's the one.
I've run out of Brooklyn Nine-Nine that's on Netflix. My partner and I have nothing to watch, which is a problem because, we don't really agree on things that we like to watch that often.
That's the one my daughter watches endlessly over and over and over again.
It is brilliant.
I've never watched a single episode.
Probably not your thing.
Most probably.
Yeah, but it's quite wholesome. Got some good characters to get invested in.
But yes, they're absolutely your demographic, you know. You millennials.
Us young people.
So it's a millennial thing, possibly.
Yeah, maybe it is. I think for me, there is something comforting about the familiarity.
Well, I was having a conversation with a gentleman a couple of weeks ago, and we were sort of comparing notes. He was moderately younger than me, but still substantially older than yourself. And he was saying the same thing as I was, in the respect that my attention span has shriveled up, especially now that I've got this serious YouTube habit.
Yeah.
And I find it very difficult to watch long-form programming. I get bored really quickly. I find myself channel hopping, literally.
In my January, you know, that I took off work, I spent quite a lot of effort in resisting YouTube, and I deactivated Facebook and was quite successful in not partaking in social media or really much screen time at all. And that was the only thing that enabled me to read again and actually have enough attention to get through a whole page. And I chewed through quite a lot of books. I think this kind of, I mean, it's not like TikTok or something where it's, you know, really short, snappy, terrible videos that you're just binging through like my partner does a lot. But still, even YouTube, I think, does have an adverse effect on everyone's attention span.
Yeah, it's terrible. I've also found myself doing a certain amount of doom scrolling on
Facebook. Unfortunately, I've picked up Reddit for doom scrolling on now, so it's not good.
Well, Instagram does it.
Yep.
Facebook does it.
It's the infinite
feed. And obviously,
feed.
TikTok, which I don't have.
I don't get it.
Suspect it's the same thing again.
It is.
Although, I have thought about getting my vast collection of audiovisual media and chopping out some of the gold and posting it on all these platforms to see how well it does. Just for the heck of it.
Why not?
But again, becoming more of a contributor than a consumer.
Yeah, slightly more creative corner of that world.
Yes.
Maybe one day we will figure out how to responsibly consume media. But it is not this day, says Theoden. Anyway, that's the end of this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our weird wheezing. Well, we're not really wheezing, are we? But our weird rambling. Anyway, thank you, and we hope you tune in for the next one. Farewell!